The Last Starfighter. You're the best there is. The number one arcade champion. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
And the reference there to you being the best there is and you being the number one arcade champion are one of the few ways that you can know that this NES game, The Last Starfighter, is a video game port of a 1984 movie that also goes by the same name, The Last Starfighter. Because it's not like
a movie.
You know what I'm saying? It's like enough time has passed. Enough time has passed. It's not like it's like in the release window of like, I've got to promote the movie, release a game. It's like 1984, now we're in 1990, yeah. And we're just getting the game based on this movie that like, look, I'm sorry, yeah, I know our audience probably likes this movie.
Did the arcade version come out alongside the movie and it just was ported to the NES now, or?
Okay, but that's where things are going to get even more confusing for you, Joe, because I don't know how long we go with this, but like the arcade game that this game is based on has nothing to do with The Last Starfighter, the movie. It's an arcade game called Iridium.
Oh, right. So they just took that game and said, let's now just say this is based off of that movie.
That movie from 1984 that we are going to release in 1990. Let's just say it's that, not change anything about the game. We don't have to worry about that. But what we can do is we can put in on the back of the box and in the manual a bunch of references to The Last Starfighter movie.
You guys are blowing my mind right now because here I was prepared to talk about, like, wow, isn't it meta? Like, we got our first, like, meta game here because, like, the movie's about playing a game called The Last Starfighter, and now we're playing a game called The Last Starfighter based off a movie called The Last Starfighter that's about a game called The Last Starfighter, and you're telling me that this is, like, a reskin?
It's a blatant reskin, too. It's not even... The game is called Iridium. It was on the Commodore 64. It was not on the arcades. So it's not even an arcade game. So the whole, like, you're the number one arcade champion. Now prove it. In the movie, it's like, now prove it in actual interstellar war. But in this game, it's like, okay, now prove it on the Commodore 64. Now prove it on the NES. It's like, this is just, I guess it's not like a direct port, but yeah, like they didn't make a game based on The Last Starfighter at all. This is just a ripoff of that Iridium game on Commodore 64.
Well, that's really disappointing. And here I was gonna start talking about the movie because that's what I want to do.
Well, I want you to talk about the movie because it is a cool movie. It has, you know, it's got that Tron-like CGI, and it is a unique plot, as you mentioned, of a kid who's so good at the video game, and then the video game turns out to be like a training course, a combat simulation, if you will, going back to Image Fight, which we recorded 2 weeks ago. Maybe that's what was happening. This is like that universe's equivalent of Image Fight, is that you play video games to then find out if you're good enough for interstellar war between a bunch of alien races. And Sean, for your actual review of the movie, can you sum it up fast for us?
Well, I was going to ask if you guys have seen it, because I haven't. all I did was watch YouTube. I think it's Movie Clips is the channel.
Isn't that the only way we're supposed to watch movies now?
You're right.
Like David Lynch said, just watch 10 movie clips on your phone on YouTube and you'll be fine.
In this TikTok generation, that is how people watch the movies. And you can't convince me otherwise. But, you know, from those 10 clips, seems pretty fun, you know? Like, there's laughs, there's tense moments, there's CG, like, from, like, an FMV in a PS1 game. it's got everything.
But hear me out on the CG for a second, because I compared it to Tron, which I'm sure the same studios did it, because there was only, like, one studio at the time
had that computer.
Able to do CG, right, yeah, exactly. But... And I'm being maybe too nice here, but from what I saw, of the movie. I actually would compare it to, like, Toy Story 1 in terms of, like, it holds up fine because you're aware of how basic it is, right? Like, when you look at Toy Story 1, you look at Toy Story 3, you're like, wow, this CG stuff really came a long way. But it's not like Toy Story 1's unwatchable, just like the, I don't know, the spaceships in the last Starfighter movie were, like, cute for the video game theme of it, right? You buy into it the same way when you play 8-bit games. You're not like,
sure.
What, I can't even look at this.
How does it compare to, and nobody in our audience is going to know this because we're younger than most of our audience, but how does it compare to Spy Kids 3D?
It's better.
Yeah, it's okay, better than that.
Good.
But one thing that I will say is that Toy Story holds up because it was always a cartoon. Like, the style is cartoonish. It is being a 3D cartoon. Whereas anything like this, it like, you can't really compare it because it's trying to be a live-action movie that's trying to sell itself as having these huge action sequences that's supposed to have some verisimilitude, and it doesn't because it doesn't, like, sell itself anymore. So that's why Toy Story holds up in this moment.
Got it. There is one other reference to the game that's actually one other reference to the movie. Inside the game, and that is the high score in the game is 500,000 points by ALX, and that is the main character's name in the movie, Alex. So they at least went a little bit beyond just saying, like, hey, if we just rename this game, right? Like, I don't know, that's a genius idea. Why didn't they just find a dinosaur video game on Commodore 64 and just start calling, you know, like, well, Jurassic Park wasn't out yet, so they haven't had that.
The
idea,
Land Before
I go,
Time.
Maybe no, they could have gotten ahead of Spielberg and released Jurassic
I can go back
Park,
in time and do
before
this.
Before the movie, yeah.
Yeah. I'm creating a little time loop. Or, yeah, they could have... no, there's actually no examples that I can make because I was born in 1992.
Land,
there's
the
no
land
examples.
Time.
No, I just don't know any movies that came out before 1992, so I'm just not suitable
any of them.
For this. I don't
That's
know
true.
Any of them.
That's true.
Well, I didn't know that this was a movie until, you know, this week. And I'll say this is one of the rare times I looked at the cover of this game and I was like, I think this deserves a manual read because it's like this regular dude in like a flannel, just like contemporary human. And then there's like, you know, I don't remember exactly, but like space design behind him or whatever. So I read the manual and without knowing it's a movie and even with knowing it's a movie, it's a very interesting story introduction. Where the first sentence of the introduction to the video game Starfighter is, ah, yes, the introduction to your favorite video game, Starfighter. Very
oh,
weird
wow.
in the first place.
That's,
but
that's
then it's
a
like,
lot.
Then it goes in like, you've played it so long, and it talks about how much you've played it in the arcade and how you had the high score. And it says, well, prepare yourself for a surprise because it's not a video game. It's a training simulator from this, I'm assuming this is the plot of the movie, from this alien on this other planet. And you've got the best score, so they're recruiting you to come and save them.
Joe,
and it, like, treats the whole thing like that, and
wouldn't
not
it
knowing
be
a movie
funny?
Was a movie, I thought it was clever.
Wouldn't it be funny if that wasn't the plot of the movie at all?
Yeah, yeah. this is just the plot of whatever this game was originally called.
Yeah, or they just got the early script and they had to start making the game back then. But they actually, in the 7 years it took them to get it from script to release of the NES version of the game, they still used the old script and not the
yeah.
new one.
Yeah, it's the HBO Game of Thrones'd it.
The game. We have to talk about the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, to get into the game, if you don't mind, forget what you know about the last Starfighter movie, because it doesn't matter here. Instead, you are playing, as I mentioned, a game called Iridium, but now it's called The Last Starfighter. In it, it's like a space shooter game that's very much like Defender, which was an arcade game and very popular in the Atari 2600, in which you shoot other enemy ships and can move back and forth across the enemy base to shoot down these ships at your own leisure. The goal is to basically land your ship on the enemy base after you're content with the number of ships you've destroyed. And then you get a cool, like, annihilation sequence of the base. So a couple things here, and I'm going to work at them one at a time because this will help stretch out the episode to give us enough to talk about. the first thing being, okay, so the mission is the kind of, like, destroy these alien bases. So if you can just do that just by landing your ship, is there any incentive to fight any of the opposing ships, the enemies, if you will?
Well, to not die being one, but also I thought, and I could just totally be wrong, because I was very confused about certain points of this game, but I thought that you had to take out like enough of their like turret defenses before you could land, right?
That's no. Only if you get to an area, because technically you can land on any of those ones that look like a landing strip, but at the end of every level, there's always just a landing strip that has no turrets on it.
Yeah, but don't you have to wait? Do you not have to wait until it says there's that blinking land
I don't
now
think you have
sign?
To wait. I think that's actually just a warning. I did have problems with landing in this game, and I don't know. Like, that's where I'm kind of confused, too, because I did this very funny thing that I've been doing recently, and that's not read the manual for the game. So it took me some time to really understand what you're supposed to do. I realized that in order to end the level, you have to end the level yourself by landing. But I think like you can only land at that last runway. But even then, you have to like do some weird button combination to do it. And go ahead.
Joe is right. I can jump in. Is right.
No, I'm not even arguing. I'm just saying that like I agree so much because I read the manual and it explains how to land and it's just wrong. Like it's just like I don't know. I still don't know how to land. Like
I've done it.
I get it sometimes once in a while. It doesn't say anything about buttons. It just says like you have to fly from the beginning of the major runway to the end of it and you'll land automatically, to my understanding. And like that happened to me sometimes, but most of the time I just fly right by.
Don't move too fast. Don't get into the landing yet because that's like our Top Gun section of this game. Landing is always an issue apparently in NES games. Just to clear it up for the confused listener at home who either knows this game or doesn't know it, Joe was correct. And there is a landing strip at the end of each level.
I was also correct, Mike. I said it.
You said that, but here's the twist. You do have to destroy specifically, not the enemy ships, but specifically the defense forces of the alien base.
So like the landed planes?
Or the turrets, as Joe was describing them. You have to destroy those things that are actually on the base itself in order to get the land now thing. To show you how not difficult that is, at least for the early stages, that is just something that will happen to you as you progress through the stage. Like you're going from left to right and you have the ability to backtrack. So it's not like you can be like, oh shoot, I missed too many. Like I gotta restart the level. It's like you have the ability to just turn around and shoot the turret that you missed. That I didn't even notice that was the mechanic, and I was still able to get to the land now sequence at the end of all of these. It is something that they at least make it so that you have to land at the end of your scroll to the right sequence, so you at least have to see the entirety of the base before you can choose to exit the level. I just feel like it is a little strange that it isn't clear all enemies in order to get the land now sequence.
Because
the enemies just always will just spawn infinity.
That's where I'm having some trouble like understanding what you're saying here, because I'm pretty sure that the land now thing just it's on a timer. Like it doesn't matter.
Not.
It's not?
It's not. It's those turrets on the base itself. Like those things that shoot at you.
Sure. Okay.
But no, there are other things on the base that might shoot things or launch projectiles too, like such as ships, and those don't matter. You don't have to kill those ships that it launches out. You just have to kill the actual destructible turrets that are on the base itself.
Okay. But because like there were times that I took too long landing now, as one would say in this game, and then they just send like a hit squad that has like perfect accuracy, and they will destroy you if you haven't landed now. So I had some trouble. I know it was easy for you.
I never said it was easy. I said as far as the early stages go, because that's about all I could tolerate. Not a spoiler for my Essential Games List vote at all. I promise. The real problem is, as Sean was mentioning, that at a certain point, right, the enemy ships go from, like, they're just scrolling in your way, right? Like, they just happen to be in your way, and you can shoot at them, you can dodge them, you can do whatever, because, again, it's just points, so you choose what to do here. But there is a point where all of a sudden the enemy ships get a little too aggressive, they get too, like, home on you, they get very, they speed up very fast, and landing is really, like, something that you might as well do soon, and maybe the pro player is the one who sticks around to keep picking off these ships to score high points, but the rest of us are just concerned with moving on to the next level. Would you agree with that, Sean?
I suppose so.
My problem with it was that I actually really like the idea of this shmup where you are kind of just backtracking on, like, this very small. It gives the feeling that you're, like, in, like, a TIE fighter or an X-wing taking on, you know, a giant Star Destroyer or something, where, like, you're just kind of, like, circling around the ship. It's in 2D, so you're not really circling around, but you're moving back and forth around it. It kind of has this cool feel to it. What bothered me was that it takes a second to turn your ship around, and I feel like just pretty much every time I turn my ship around, enemies, like, five enemies spawn behind me when it's too late for me to shoot them, and it would take me too long to turn around, and they just immediately shoot me. Like, and maybe I'm just, I got to get better at dodging, but it just felt like even when I'm trying to land, it's, like, always, there's so much that feels about, like, just management of, like, these enemies that felt a little unfair.
I mean, I agree to some extent. I think a lot of it is, okay, so you get, like, some iframes when you're turning around. Like, you can also do, like, a spinorama, and I'm pretty sure you get some invincibility there, too. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I think if the level is going to be this small, because we're used to these shmups that just, they're endlessly scrolling, and you never know when it's going to end, and it all starts to blur together, that, like, it's this small of a game, of a game space, that, like, it's got to have some extra challenge to it. And I think that, like, the challenge that's added to the level itself is kind of countered by the fact that you have some defensive measures. Like, you can dodge things if you're moving slow enough already, then you can kind of use that turnaround animation in your favor. But I don't know. I think there's a balance there that it's sort of hitting.
Yeah, I'll also admit that the thing you mentioned about kind of the barrel roll you can do, I almost didn't utilize that at all, and I probably should have.
Maybe I only utilized it when I was trying to land, so I know what you mean.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I was just feeling like enemies, since they spawn kind of at random, it was just like, as soon as I turn around and my back's turned, enemies just spawn immediately behind me and shoot me, where it's like, well, like, if I knew they were there, I wouldn't have turned around, but they weren't there. They appeared there as soon as I turned around, and that bothered me.
And one thing that I want to point out, just going back to the movie for a second here, it's funny that this game has such a, you know, for a shmup, non-standard structure. Because the plot of this movie, and there are lines and dialogue conversations in this movie that literally codify a shmup. Like, that they actually talk about, like, we've always sort of called out, like, why the hell are they just sending this one guy to take out this entire air force or this entire armada? Like, can't they send him some more resources? And then in the plot of this movie, they actually do that. And then when they make a game out of the movie about games, they make it not that. Sorry, I just think that that's super weird and so many missed opportunities here.
Well, just remember, because that's because they made a game that wasn't about a movie, and then somebody said, I'll pay you money to just port
this.
But
they could have licensed any game to rename.
Yes, I totally agree. Why couldn't Image Fight be the last Starfighter?
That's
hear
true.
You loud and clear. And I'm only picking on Image Fight because we just recorded that episode 2 weeks ago. So no biggie there. Just one other thing. The game really wants you to believe that the ability to control your speed is important. It is something that you do have power over. by choosing how fast you want to go. And I guess it matters most in the small detail that we haven't talked about yet for the base, that there are things on the base, and it is a little unclear what those things are, but there are things on the base that you can fly over, and then there are others that you can't fly over and you will crash into. And I don't know if anybody else was able to figure out the secret sauce that was like, oh, when the graphic looks like this, you'll crash into it. But I certainly couldn't, and it led to a lot of surprise deaths.
Yeah.
So I guess I should have been playing slower?
So the whole speed thing, basically you should be playing as close to standard shmup scrolling speed as you can until there's like a thing that kind of looks like a pickup. So you might fly into it thinking you'll get a power up, but then you just explode. Otherwise, if you go any faster, you will just run into the things that Mike was talking about. The only thing I could tell is that these things that you can hit and blow up, like they have like a drop shadow. That's the only way that I could tell, but that is not legible at the speed you're usually going at.
To move on to the landing sequence, something you guys were trying to jump the gun on, and I had to reel you back in for a second. Landing is something that the manual tries to describe, and then you realize, and I think Joe was coming to the same conclusion, Sean, having not read the manual, wouldn't know this, that it doesn't actually tell you.
I read that part of the manual after the fact.
Okay, got it, got it.
That's like ASMR right there.
It doesn't actually tell you how to land. It just mentions landing.
And it says, like, hold back.
Right, right. And it's like, okay, but I could really use, like, an input now if I, yeah. if I was a manual, right? I'd be talking about the controls. And so to land, for those of you who maybe played this game and still haven't figured it out, you have to approach the landing strip at the end of each level. So that when you are scrolling from left to right, it doesn't work if you go right to left, believe it or not. If you turn your ship around, you have to go back to before the landing strip and then turn it around again. So that
because whether or not you're blowing this place up, you still have to follow the air traffic control laws. Yeah.
yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, they won't. Yeah, they just won't let you land, right? No, who knows what the explanation is.
You're cleared to land if you're coming in this way, even if you're blowing us up.
Right. So basically, you have to be at the slowest speed as you're approaching this landing strip. And then, and only then, if you're on the slowest speed, do you, as you're hovering over the landing strip, you press to slow down one last time. And that is what causes it to land. You cannot be at a faster speed than slow, than slowest, and just keep spamming the left button enough, it would be the left button because you're facing the left side.
Did you ever try that and feel like, because I never was maybe specifically trying to be at the slow, like thinking like this is what I have to do, but I was at the slowest speed, I thought, for a lot of the time because I was just trying to figure it out. And then I would hit the like slow down button and it would just turn me around.
And no, it works every time, in my opinion, once you know that. And I only know that because of game FAQs. I had to read it. I literally couldn't wrap my head around it.
At least 60% of the time it works all the time.
Is there like a, I mean, how lined up with the runway? Does your shadow have to be lined up or does your ship have to be lined up?
Your ship has to be lined up.
The shadow?
It's the ship.
The ship.
It is the ship. Okay. Because, you know, intuitively I would think the shadow, but then but I tried both too, and it happened sometimes, and other times it didn't, and I could just never nail it down.
Yeah, it was tough. It was real tough, guys.
No, I do agree that it's one of those things that's almost impossible until you find out the secret sauce. Like there was a moment for me where I was actually just thinking like, I'm not going to be able to play this game. Like it's not going to work. So I went to game FAQs, read that, and just immediately landed every single time afterwards. Not bragging again, but it did, that's how it went. And the funny thing is that I proceeded to read the rest of the game FAQ, the only FAQ written about this game on the NES. And the rest of the FAQ just trashes the game so hard, like unnecessarily, just like, can't believe that this person who wrote this simultaneously wrote this wall of text and continues to berate the game the entire time.
Yeah, I, for some reason, did not have the mental clarity to go to game FAQs. I just thought, like, in this day and age where every game has something written about it, I just Googled, like, how do you land in the last Starfighter NES, and was surprised to find nothing really there.
There's nothing about anything about the last Starfighter on the NES. I am surprised about, and we've seen this a lot recently, where, like, are these games rare? Are they worth anything? Like, did people just not play a lot of NES games in the 1990s? It's surprising how little information I'm able to find about some of these games. We've heard of the movie, or at least watched the clips on YouTube, and now it's like, but nobody's talking about the NES game? That's weird.
I sense a conspiracy.
It's a cover-up.
Once you land the ship on the base, though, you're taken to a bonus game, or call it a game, if you will. It's a bonus screen that the manual refers to as the fuel rod chamber. So I guess you're doing something in there to get enough fuel to go on to the next base. But all it really is just two squares flashing one after the other. One has the word quit on it. The other has a number. That number is going to be the amount of points that the game gives you. And you have to press the A button while hopefully the number is flashing, or else you press the quit button, and that just means the bonus level's over. And if you get the number, then it moves you on to the next stage in the pyramid of the fuel rod chamber.
All you gotta know is that it's dumb.
Thank you, please.
You don't need to do it.
So thankful you saved me.
Yeah, this is the worst excuse for an interactive minigame that I think that we've seen on this console. It's literally just like, try to match the clock speed of this, and that's it. I'm done talking about it.
Yeah, by the time you get to, like, the highest up one, I mean, like, the highest one, it's got to be pure luck. I just don't believe someone could be, like, fast enough to actually, like, get that on skill.
No.
There's only 15 levels, but they do get a lot more challenging as it goes on, especially with the way that the enemy ships behave. You will die a lot. You will run into things on the base a lot. You will just succumb to the surprise attacks that Joe was referring to, where it's like, well, it's one thing to be able to deal with the ships as they're on screen, but it's another thing when they just appear suddenly and you just can't move fast enough to get away from them.
Yeah.
But with only 15 levels, right? Like, you can leave whenever, right? Like, there's no consequence for leaving early. So assuming that you just successfully get to the end of each stage and know to slow down and know how to land, you could theoretically play this game very fast and beat it very fast if you knew where the ships were spawning out of. Is it like, shouldn't it just been an infinite loop? Why only 15 levels?
Well, hold on. What I've found that we aren't very keen on a game stretching itself out just by repeating itself. So I almost, like, thank it for its mercy that it's not doing
I'm glad
that.
I spent $60 for 20 minutes of gameplay.
Yeah, I mean,
when you said you can just leave at any time, I actually thought you meant that, like, you can just get up, put the controller down, and walk away from this game
just
at any
leave.
Time.
Because that's your first thought. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's
that
your
is
first
exactly.
thought.
But you also, Not to subvert the question you asked, but I kind of agree with Sean. I just think, like, make more game if you're going to make more game. Otherwise, like, I'll be done. But you also mentioned that you will crash into the ship, or to, like, parts of the ship often. Did anyone else feel like that was a lot of those things are, like, hard to tell what's 3D and what's
not?
Yeah. I crashed into a lot of things I thought were part of the background.
There's definitely, like, I was describing it earlier. There's, like, a drop shadow that'll show you what is crash-intoable and what isn't. But it definitely blends into the stage.
Right.
So it's not like if they'd have just given it a contrasting color, then holy shit, you solved cancer. Like, that's all you got to do. But they didn't do that. So you have to kind of fly slow, and it's silly.
At the end of the game, as you scroll, well, before I get to the end of the game, actually, there's a different scrolling thing I wanted to talk about, and that is those base destruction sequences. After the fuel rod chamber bonus game, and after you land, you see the annihilation of the alien ship level that you were just on. But it's kind of autopilot. Like, you can steer the ship from left to right, but you can't die in the explosion, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you just watch it blow up.
It's there to be cool.
But like, why is it on autopilot if you can control the ship, right? Like, and you're just watching the whole level blow up again. It's like, shouldn't there be one last, like, challenge here? I don't know if I would have liked that in the actual game, but, like, thinking about Substance, like, isn't this just weird that, like, at the end of every level, you just kind of watch the same cutscene over and over again where the level destroys itself?
I was thinking of it the opposite way. I was like, oh, okay, there's this cutscene, and as an added perk, they let you have maintain control of the ship during the cutscene, rather than, like, this is a level, but nothing can happen to you. So I guess it just depends on the way you look at it.
Yeah, had the levels not started with you needing to get into, like, the safety corral zone to be able to control the ship, you know what I'm talking about? There's, like, those five beach balls that, like, right. Once you enter that, you have control of your ship. But had that not been there, I would have thought that they just didn't know how to program a cutscene and that you could just control the ship at all times.
That was an immediate introduction to frustration. I don't know what it is, but that not having control of the ship for those first few seconds, like, immediately made me kind of upset. And I don't know if that's just, like, my reptile brain that's been getting worse and worse and just getting rotted by video games, but that it just didn't feel right. It felt right to you guys?
No.
I don't think I had the same frustration, but I was like, hey, what? Like, I was, like, checking my controller, make sure it was, like, plugged in, and, like, I was a little concerned for a moment.
I don't think this is related to the movie, but after you've finished the final level, you scroll past a bunch of text that says, good zapping, ... turkey.
Yes. What the heck is that?
Sean, do they ever say good zapping turkey in the movie?
Because as the definitive Last Starfighter fan here, I'm almost positive they didn't say turkey once. And I did watch the scene where, you know, his alien friends meet his human friends, and, like, they say, how do you do? And I do well, how do you do? And not once did they say turkey.
It's just interesting because I also believe it's in the original Iridium game as well. So almost confirms that it wouldn't be from the movie. But why not just change it to be in the movie? And while we're talking about things that you could change to be in the movie, Sean, as the biggest Last Starfighter fan in the room, were you surprised that there... Yeah, in the world, I should say. Were you surprised that there was no, like, after you kill a certain amount of enemies, press A and B at the same time to launch the Death Blossom?
Yeah, so... I was gonna mention the Death Blossom because that was one of the scenes on movie clips on YouTube. But the thing is that I only watched all the movie clips on YouTube after I played the game. Like, several hours, like, maybe 24 hours between playing the game and watching the definitive movie clips, This Makes You a Fan videos. So I only learned about the Death Blossom after the fact. But if you're asking me after the fact, yeah, I think it's a missed opportunity. That's, like, the biggest scene in the movie, if movie clips is to be believed.
Well, it's definitely the coolest because, you know, there's a lot of talk about the Death Blossom, and then to actually see it, again, I'm not saying that the graphics look great compared to the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, but it sold me. I was like, hey, that looks great, you know? Like, I'm buying it. He's doing all that. And maybe it's because they leaned into the video game feel of it all, especially the, you know, 80s arcade aesthetic of it, but I buy that, and I'm really surprised to see that they couldn't even just deliver a, you know, Death Blossom end sequence at the end of level 15. Just something.
Are we sure that this isn't just a ROM hack?
No, but isn't it really? Like, I mean, I know you're joking, but like, isn't it kind of like? Didn't they just say like, hey, we're just gonna pay to take the same game and just rename it? Like, that's all. All they really had to do was just design the menu.
Yeah. You're right.
To have the name. Obviously, they had to do a lot more to also program it over to assembly. And speaking of, on the development side, Mindscape, who was the one who came up with this whole idea of like, well, let's get The Last Starfighter onto NES by taking this game called Iridium on Commodore 64, they contracted a company called East Ridge Technology, which sounds professional, but was really just run by this guy, Nick Eastridge, and he winds up doing a bunch of games for Mindscape, but one of the games, this one, The Last Starfighter, they gave him, like, a very small amount of time and basically a budget so that he could not hire anybody else. He had to single-handedly program the game in 6502 assembly language, and I think that's why we wind up with, like, just a straight bare bones port with no Last Starfighter references into it. So I'm going to give East Ridge Technology the benefit of the doubt here and blame it all on Mindscape, the financiers. It's always who financed it that's in trouble.
Well, here's where I disagree, because now you're making me think that, like, Mindscape didn't even know that he plagiarized a video game and that he did so under duress. So I'm not saying he's evil, but I think that, like, it's a situation where, like, you didn't study for a test, so you find a way to cheat, and then he cheated and got away with it. And, like, the people that made Iridium didn't think that their work was going to be turned into The Last Starfighter, and then it did. Like, I think that's how it went down.
And there is a two-player mode in The Last Starfighter, but it is not simultaneous. It is one after the other, and I guess they were just trying to stay true to the movie on that regard, right? There aren't two people that are the number one at arcades. There's just one dude, and his name is Alex, so they at least stayed faithful to the movie by not including a two-player simultaneous game.
That was their reasoning, too. They were like, yeah, we had it all programmed, but then we were like, you know, this is just too disingenuous to what the movie was.
On the sequels and spinoff side, first, obviously, there's Iridium on the Commodore 64. Go check that out, because it actually gets a lot of high praise, but maybe that's just because it's a game on the Commodore 64. Like, how often do you hear about must-play games on the C64? And how often do you hear it called the C64, right? It's right there next to the N64. Much less powerful, of course. And another thing to note is that Mindscape will do this again. They'll do the whole, like, oh, let's just take a C64 game and port it over to the NES and use an established franchise. When we play whatever their Conan game is, it's going to it's going to. And that's not Conan O'Brien. that's Conan the Last Warrior.
I thought they were one and the same.
Yeah, you know, I thought so too for a long time, but that game is based on a port of a computer game called Myth, History in the Making, and they're going to turn that into a Conan game instead. After that, we have a game called Star Raiders 2, which was on the Atari 8-bit family, and if you're wondering what the Atari 8-bit family is, it's a bunch of computers again, so there's a lot of like uncomfortable computer consoles. Do you even call them consoles at that point? No, computers.
Platforms
that we don't really know about. We're out of our element here a little bit, but apparently they were making a big splash so much that people were like, get these games on the NES. But Star Raiders 2 is, the game was originally developed as a tie-in with the movie The Last Starfighter. And so that is the game, Star Raiders 2, is the closest to the Last Starfighter, the movie.
We're gonna get an adaptation of The Last Starfighter on the NES, and it's not even gonna be called The Last Starfighter.
Well, no, Star Raiders 2 is only on that Atari 8-bit family computer.
Oh, sorry. Atari.
So I'm just saying, if you want the video game that actually works The Last Starfighter into more than just the manual and the box, you play Star Raiders 2, crazy. which is confusing because Star Raiders 2 is not something that you would, you know, like that's like playing Duke Nukem and finding out, like, you know, actually that's the Terminator, right? Like, no, yeah. Like, you know, you
no,
don't
no,
do
no,
that.
No, it's Duke Nukem 3 and it's actually Terminator 1.
Right, right. It just doesn't happen. And then lastly, for Iridium, again, this is so confusing because none of these games are actually sequels and spinoffs to this Last Starfighter NES game we played, but Iridium was followed by a game called Iridium Plus, which was just basically new levels of the same exact game, which was a very popular thing to do on computer systems. And then Iridium 2 finally came out on the Amiga, which has like something crazy, like 3,600 games on it. So if you ever go through that library, we won't be doing a podcast on it. But if you ever go through that library,
never
know that
never.
If you did it, yeah, if you did it alphabetically, you'd be playing Iridium 2 pretty near the end of your 1,000-year journey.
So you're only doing 3 games a year?
Yeah, that's right. You heard me. I know
okay,
what I said.
Double checking.
Yep. I know what I said, and I know how I'll vote on the Essential Games list. I don't know what it is now, 320 episodes into the podcast, that like I can read a game in about 5 minutes, but I knew 5 minutes into this one that I wasn't putting it on the Essential Games list. And yes, I did spend more than 5 minutes with it, but it never improved from the first 5, which leads me to believe that I shouldn't have wasted any more time than the 5 minutes I wasted on it. And you certainly shouldn't waste any more time if you listen to the entirety of this episode by checking it out. Sean?
Yeah, this is such a bizarre game. I mean, I guess mostly from the background. And I'm glad that you guys got my live reaction knowing, just finding out that this was never supposed to tie in to The Last Starfighter. But it's such a weird game that, like, I have to give it credit, at least like Iridium, that it's like a shmup, but it, like, there are so many big changes from the standard formula that, like, that's cool, but, like, you know, it wasn't all that fun. So I would have given The Last Starfighter all that credit, but I can't. It wasn't them. But regardless, it's not good enough to call it essential. It's more a fun story about the movie and movie clips on YouTube than it is a great video game. So yeah, not essential.
Joe.
Oh, I hated it. I thought that the one thing that I found interesting about it was the ability to move back and forth on this kind of small stage. As a shmup, I think that's an interesting idea, and I would love to see somebody airlift that idea out of this game and put it into another game that felt a little better. And you know, maybe there are redeeming qualities about it, and I'm just bad at this game, and you know, I didn't like the way that it kind of seemed to cheese me in the sense that, like, it just spawns enemies in places that I'm already, like, flying away from, and things like that. But overall, certainly not essential.
All right, that's 3 no's. Next week, we will be playing the Moffat Conspiracy Golgo 13.
Oh, sound, yeah.
Sound Let's familiar, go. Boys?
Let's go.
It's been a minute, right?
I don't remember anything about that game.
You liked it?
Actually, it's like one of the few that I actually do remember a lot about because
I know it's
it
like
was so
spy.
Interesting to me.
It's got cutscenes.
Yeah, but there's like, Yeah, and there's like 10 different like types of gameplay in it. Yeah, you know, there's like a shmup level. There's like, you know, your run and gun, and then there's like 3D stages.
Yeah, there was like a whole minute where they just had like a sniper mini game in there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They were just like, hey, now you're a sniper. Golgo 13 was episode 115, recorded in, let's check notes, April 17th, 2020.
Wow.
And Golgo 13, the Moffat conspiracy, yeah, is May 3rd, 2024. So that's kind of cool. Time is a flat circle. I am going to go watch David Lynch's Blue Velvet movie clips on YouTube now, just the way he intended.